Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to the book of Exodus. I'm super, super excited. Hey, we're on day 97, If you've been rocking with us for 96 days, then shout out to you. Hey, if you haven't done the reading today, then like I say every day, pause the audio, stop the video, go do the reading today. We are in Exodus chapters 1-4. We got 4 chapters of the Bible to read. Honestly, action-packed. I know I've been saying that for a while now, but after we get through the first 14-ish chapters of Exodus, that's when they cross the Red Sea. It'll get a little slower, so I want you to gear up, okay? Enjoy these narrative-based chapters at the beginning of Exodus where all the action is. We're going to get tabernacle instructions 2 times, okay, in this book. So enjoy the narrative, but we're going to do this together. We can get through this. We're going to get through the book of Exodus. Let's jump in with some context clues. A couple big picture ideas, okay? First context clue is that Exodus, the story of the Exodus, would be the origin story for the people of Israel. Now, I know you're thinking to yourself, isn't Genesis like an origin story? And yes and no. Genesis is more of the origin story for humanity, the origin story for the entire Bible. But Exodus is the origin story for the people of Israel, for the nation of Israel. When you think about the Torah and the people of Israel specifically, I want you to think about Exodus as like that origin story. And I want you to think about Genesis as almost like a prequel. Okay. So think about Exodus as part one. This is actually the first narrative. This is the first story. This is supposed to give identity. A prequel isn't part one. It's kind of like, here's the behind the scenes footage on what happened before the origin story. So Genesis kind of functions as a prequel in the Bible. Exodus is really our massive origin story. And so we're going to see all these parallels between Exodus and Genesis as we go through the days. Here's another big like context clue that I want you to focus on. Since this is Israel's origin story, you may want to do some digging in terms of, okay, what's the historical validity that there was an exodus of hundreds of thousands of people from the land of Egypt? Like, wouldn't there be record of that? Like, wouldn't the Egyptians have kept record of that? You know, archaeology is always, you know, Christian archaeology, at least, is always trying to back up or defend the things that are being said in the Bible. And here's the biggest defense that this stuff actually happened. It's not archaeology, because it's quite clear that the Egyptians saw this event as embarrassing and probably went to great lengths to remove this from any of their official records. But let's just think about this, right? If you were to fabricate an origin story, if you were to make up an origin story for your nation, like for your people group, wouldn't that origin story involve you guys being awesome, amazing? I don't think that origin story would involve you being slaves, you being subjugated, you being oppressed. I don't think that origin story would involve God delivering you and then you building a golden calf idol out in the wilderness in total rebellion against the God who's delivered you. Okay, if this is a fabricated origin story, this is a terrible, these people missed a fantastic opportunity to make themselves look really, really good. And the thing that consistently makes me or convinces me that I'm reading something that is a true account of real events is that the frailty and the failure of humanity is on display. If you kind of want a technical term for this, a lot of times when I teach apologetics, I'll tell people that we know that the Bible is real because it gives early testimony. Like if you look at the dating of secular letters, and then you look at the dating of Paul's letters, it's like, man, this stuff's early. It gives eyewitness testimony. It gives excruciating testimony, which means people were under pain. Like, they got fed to lions and they went to their deathbeds saying that, like, the resurrection really happened, right? So, like, if it's going to cost me pain in order to say that something's true, it's probably true. And then there's expectant testimonies. There's tons of prophecy in the Bible. But the one that I always love is that the Bible has embarrassing testimony. One of the ways that I know that this stuff is true is because there's no way that Moses would write a story where he is killing people if that's not true, okay? If Moses is fabricating stories, then he would probably eliminate the parts where his failures are on display. He'd probably maybe eliminate the parts where he stutters or eliminate the parts where he fails or falls on his face. Like, he would probably edit that stuff out. So this is Israel's origin story. And the reason I believe it is not because there's been an archaeological find. It's not because we've identified the Pharaoh, who was really the Pharaoh at the time of the Exodus. No, I believe it because this is either ridiculous or totally true. Okay, like if this is fabricated, then this is a terrible way to fabricate a story. The humanity that's on display would actually point to the fact that this stuff is true. That's kind of like big picture context. Let's actually get into a bit of the reading. When we get into chapter one, okay, everything that Pharaoh does is going to backfire on him. It's a massive theme for the whole first chapter. So Pharaoh is going to say, hey, like, let's oppress the people. He oppresses the people of Israel. They keep growing. And this is classic xenophobia. He's scared. If they keep multiplying, if they keep growing, there's going to be more Israelites than there are Egyptians. They could partner with our enemies. They could overtake us. We're going to lose power. So they oppress them. Well, that backfires. He oppresses them. They keep growing. The next thing that he tries is, hey, let's kill the babies. The midwives that are assigned, they're like, no, we're not about that. Finally, he's serious about infanticide. So you're going to get themes from Exodus are going to come back when Herod is going to kill baby boys under the age of 2 years old. And then this backfires because of the system to kill children that Pharaoh puts in place. A woman puts her baby in a basket. The word there is teva. We're going to come back to that word. It's going to be our nerdy nugget for the day. Puts her baby in a basket. And what house does that baby end up at? Pharaoh's house. So Pharaoh ends up raising the very child that he was trying to kill because everything that he tries to do against God's people backfires on him. And man, I could preach that because if you're blessed, you're blessed. If you're blessed, you're not cursed. And if the enemy tries to curse you, if the enemy tries to do something against you, you're blessed. The blood of Jesus has blessed you. He's covered you. So everything that Pharaoh tries to do, everything he attempts to do, that doesn't mean that it doesn't cause pain and suffering. It just means that it doesn't thwart God's purpose and plans. Okay, what's this teva? It's our nerdy nugget for the day. Well, this teva is actually a loaner word, okay? It's not an original Hebrew word. It's kind of like baptize in English. The Greek word is baptizo. And instead of creating an English word, we just took the Greek word. We loaned it from the Greek language. We just took it into the English language. And now it's a part of the English language. So teva, it actually means ark. So this is calls back to Noah and the flood. And an ark, a teva, was actually used in Egyptian idol worship, pagan worship. And it was a floating basket that actually had idols on it. And it would kind of float on the Nile River from one temple to the next temple. So you could see why God uses this word when talking about the ark that is going to have eight images, eight people made in the image of God inside of the ark, and that this floating temple would be the thing that would protect them in the chaos waters. So if the Nile River represents the chaos waters, the floating temple is a teva, it's an ark. So Moses now is going to live through what he's going to have to lead the people through. This is going to be a theme all the way through Exodus, that he's going to live through what he has to lead through. So he survives the waters. Therefore, the people are going to survive the Red Sea. He survives the wilderness. He goes out into the wilderness. He meets God. This is the burning bush. And God's like, hey, go free the people, bring them back here. So he survives the waters. He leads them through the waters. He survives the wilderness for 40 years. He is able to lead the people through the wilderness for 40 years. He encounters the presence of God on this holy mountain, the burning bush. He can lead the people there. Moses had never been to the promised land. Therefore, he couldn't lead the people there. Joshua had been to the promised land. And this is why Joshua is actually the leader who's able to lead the people there. This is actually a timeless truth. You cannot lead people where you have not gone yourself. This is really important for every worship leader. I can't lead people into the presence of God if I've never been into the presence of God. I can't lead people into wisdom if I've never encountered wisdom. I can't lead people in a way that I have not lived myself. Let's keep trekking. So now you know what a teva is. This basket that Moses' mother makes is a form. It is an ark. It is in small form, the same thing that Noah actually has to construct. Finally, Moses ends up in Pharaoh's home. I need you to see this. God's sovereignty in separating Moses. Everyone that is subjugated by the Egyptians are a slave class of people, which means they were probably illiterate, but Moses would have had access to the best educational resources, I mean, in the known world. And so who better to be the figurehead for producing Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy than Moses? Okay, so this is, again, God's divine sovereignty. Pharaoh, you think you are going to destroy my people? You think you're going to destroy this leader? Actually, you're setting him up for his divine purpose. Moses ends up killing an Egyptian. He flees. He's on the run. And while he's out in the wilderness, he encounters God. Now, next thing that I just want to tell you is that Moses' life, and we're going to be dealing with Moses for the next, I mean, for the remainder of the Torah, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, Moses is going to be the main character. For the rest of the Torah, we're going to be face-to-face with Moses. So it's good to know this, that Moses' life can be split into 40, 40, and 40, okay? From the ages of 0 to 40, he lives in Egypt. From the ages of 40 to 80, he's wandering out in the wilderness. He becomes a shepherd. He marries a Midianite woman by the name of Zipporah. And finally, at 80 years old, he encounters the burning bush. So if you ever wanted to know, like, what if you ever pictured Moses like a 33-year-old at the burning bush, wrong. It's another nerdy nugget for the day. Moses is actually 80 years old at the burning bush and gets commissioned by God to go back to Egypt and to lead the people out of bondage, to lead the people out of slavery. And then from the age of 80 to 120 is when you get the plagues, the crossing of the Red Sea, the building of the tabernacle, and the 40 years of wandering through the desert, wandering through the wilderness. So Moses' life can be split into 0 to 40, 40 to 80, 80 to 120. Family, the wait is over. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, is out now and available everywhere books are sold. Literally today, I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I signed a bunch of copies at a physical location. So you can grab this book at a physical Barnes & Noble, or you can go to a Books A Million or Amazon or anywhere books are sold and grab a copy. If you enjoy reading the Bible from an ancient perspective, if you understand that the beauty of Scripture is actually knowing it in context, then you'll love this book. And if there's any chaos in your personal life, I think that reading the Bible from an ancient perspective can actually help to crush the chaos in your life. I think this book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I really do. I think we wrote a good one. I think you should get a copy today. All right, back to the episode. let's get to our timeless truth. God does encounter Moses at the burning bush, okay? And five times Moses rejects the call of God in his life. And honestly, Moses' five rebuttals, I would put into the category of just like classic insecurity. You got the wrong guy. I don't think I can do this. And God's response to Moses, it always blows my mind. He does not respond to Moses the way that you and I would respond to people who are insecure. Like, imagine if you had a friend who's battling with insecurity, you'd probably tell your friend all kinds of reassuring things like, oh man, you're handsome, you're this, you're articulate, you're whatever. You'd compliment them, right? To try to get them to believe in themselves. That is not how God handles Moses' insecurity. Here's how God handles Moses' insecurity. He says, I am that I am. He says, whoa, Moses, I'm not here to tell you that you are who you are. I'm here so that you can get a revelation that I am who I am. And if the I am has called you, then you are more than sufficient as long as you have me. I don't need you to be eloquent. I am that I am. I don't need you to be wealthy. I am that I am. I don't need you to have all the answers. I am that I am. Now, that's not an excuse for us to mail it in, be lazy. No, that's just saying, actually, the very thing that I'm insecure about, I don't need to allow the thing that I'm insecure about to cause me to have crippling insecurity in my life that means that I don't move forward that God's called me to do. God doesn't come into your life. And I know we all have our little affirmation journals and it's cute. But the reality is that God at no point says get an affirmation journal to combat your insecurity. No, he says, get a revelation of me to combat your insecurity. The problem with your insecurity is not that you don't know enough about you. It's that you don't know enough about me. So often, we try to get people to fall in love with themselves and like themselves in order to get over their insecurities. I'm telling you right now, I'm a very confident individual. It's not because I like me. I'm very aware of my failures, my faults, my shortcomings, my sin. The Bible says the human heart is wicked above all things. If I try to be secure by falling in love with me, so I just start studying me, that's only going to lead to more insecurity because there ain't a lot about me that's awesome. The reason that I'm a secure, confident person is because I go, wait, you knit me together in my mother's womb? Whoa, you call me your son? My identity doesn't start with me. My identity didn't start with discovering me. That's humanistic in its approach. My identity starts with not discovering myself, but with an encounter with God where I realize who he is. And if you are who you are, and if you've called me, then that's it. That's all I need to know. What I need to know is that you're my creator and I'm made in your image. And there's a lot of people who I think, you got an affirmation journal, you're still insecure. And my timeless truth for you today is maybe you need to stop with the affirmations. And maybe you need to start with a confession. And that confession is, God, you're able to do all things. God, you've never failed. God, you're Jehovah Jireh. You're a provider. God, you're Jehovah Tsidkenu. You're my righteousness. God, you're Jehovah Shammah. You're the God who is there. You're Jehovah Nisi, you're my banner. God, I've got to actually get a revelation of you. And then and only then I can see myself. I know that that's counterintuitive. I know that that's not man-centered. That's God-centered. It's saying if I actually seek God, if I seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, everything else will fall. If I get the top button right, all the other buttons will fall into place. But if I start up at the top with me, myself, and I, then I'll always be arrogant. I'll always be insecure because pride and insecurity are actually the flip side of the same exact coin. All right, that's the first couple of chapters of Exodus. And tomorrow, we'll pick up some loose strands, but we'll get into Exodus chapter. Let me check the schedule. We'll get into Exodus chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8. So we got 4 more chapters tomorrow for day 98. Hey, if you're on a streak, don't break it. If you're not on a streak, guess what? A good opportunity to get on a streak. I love you guys. I'm so proud of you. Hey, if you're going through this content every day, I am insanely proud of you. the number one decision you can make to change, increase, revolutionize your spiritual life is to hear from God every day. And he wants to talk to you every day through his word. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com? I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.